Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The first presidential debate is set for tonight in New York. An audience of 100 million is expected to watch how Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump face off over security and the economy. Veteran broadcast journalist Lester Holt of NBC will moderate. Today for our weekly reporters roundtable, we'll consider the challenges for each candidate. Joining us from Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, Andy Chow. Welcome back, Andy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also, Columbus Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Enquirer, Chrissy Thompson. Thanks for joining us, Chrissy.
Thank you.
And from the Columbus Dispatch, Statehouse reporter Jim Siegel. Welcome back as always, Jim.
Good morning.
Tonight is the moment of truth, so to speak, I guess. It's one of three debates scheduled in this cycle before Election Day on November 8th. And you know, we already know supposedly whatever the campaigns want us to know about how they're preparing. Hillary doing her usual yeoman's job of covering the issues in her apparently mountains of folders of policy. And Donald Trump kind of flying by the seat of his pants. About what you expected, Andy Chow?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, if you look at what Donald Trump did in the Republican debates, I mean, he worked well when he was just kind of spitballing ideas when he wasn't really honed in on one specific 10-second soundbite or anything like that. And so I think it would be weird if he changed it up at this point, because that's his bread and butter. That's what's been working for him.
Yeah, but this is all different now. This is one-on-one with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I don't know that he'll change much of his approach. I mean, in some ways, he feels like his approach of kind of we'll see how things go. I promise you this will work, but I haven't decided what I want to do. That is his policy in some ways. So I think it's going to be really interesting when I talk to undecided voters in Ohio. They mention policies a lot. They want to know what the candidates think about a lot of things. We are kind of more of an issues-driven state than this election
would.
Well,
an issues-driven state, though, that's leaning toward Donald Trump.
That's true.
Not an issues wonky kind of a guy.
It's still a very close race, though. I mean,
I
within the margin of error. So, I do hear that from folks who are even leaning toward Donald Trump, that they really would like to hear from him on the issues. And so it'll be interesting to see if we hear more of that tonight. And if that makes a difference in people's minds. People, I think, are a lot of undecided voters are waiting for this debate. So.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the debate tonight. It's coming up tonight between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. It's supposed to get a record audience, one that will rival the Super Bowl. A lot of politics is compared to sports anyway, so why not this? If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And from our Trump supporters out there, give us a call and tell us what you think he needs to do to continue his campaign to succeed tonight. I don't know if there'll be a winner or a loser, but to succeed. And Hillary Clinton supporters out there, tell us what you think. And we'd love to hear from the undecideds, of course, and tell us what you're going to be looking for. Jim Siegel, it is close. Everything's too close to call at this point within the margin of error. What does a debate do at this point in the game?
Well, you know, common theory is that you can't win a presidential election based on the first debate, but you can lose it, depending on what kind of mistakes you make, gaffes you make. They've been playing some clips over the past week. I know I've heard of, you know, the Gerald Ford saying that, you know, that Russia's involvement in the, you know, Eastern Ukraine or whatever didn't, you know, he was denying that there was involvement there, and that hurt him a lot. But this is such a different campaign season.
I've heard you say that so much.
Well, it just is. I'm trying to envision what gaffe Donald Trump could even make that would have a tremendous swing. I mean, I think that it's going to be, you know, you're going to look at what, you know, I think voters who are truly undecided, and frankly, I don't think there's that many at this point. There's been so much saturation with the coverage on this that it's hard to imagine that you haven't at least got a sense of where you want to vote.
Yeah.
But But if, you know, I think people are going to be looking for, okay, how does he, you know, we've heard all the bluster and we've heard all the stump speeches from the two sides. So let's see, what do they really say about some of these specific issues? Because this is the first time Trump is going to be in a situation where he's one-on-one. He can't hide. He can't decide to go quiet when he wants to and let the other 2, 3, 4, 12 people do the talking when it's an issue that he doesn't really want to address. So it will be more interesting of a dynamic, particularly for him. We've seen Hillary in one-on-one debates before, particularly in 2008, so we get a sense of what her style is. But for him, this will be an interesting challenge for him and the kind of things that he was able to get away with in the primary debates,
comparing hand sizes,
but even so, more so with the attacks on, you know, it's one thing to make fun of and call names to Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. It's another thing to standing alone on a stage with a woman and to try to do those same kind of things as the nominee of your party. That I don't know that would play nearly as well as it did in the primary, and I think I would be surprised if he went that route.
And I guess if you're thinking about it, those people who are those votes that are still up in the air that Donald Trump will need to attract are the people who want to see maybe some more civility from Donald Trump, something that can convince them, okay, I think I can wrap my head around voting for this guy. But on the other end, like although it is a one-on-one debate, like Jim was saying, there really isn't anything that Donald Trump has been able to do wrong so far. Any sort of gaffe
that
or any sort of
other candidates would easily have been destroyed him. He doesn't.
Oh,
touch
yeah.
Him.
I mean, I think about like the biggest slip up from Mitt Romney 4 years ago was when he said like 47% of America will always vote for Obama no matter what. That was the undercover video, and I remember that being such a big deal and really hurt him. And that pales in comparison to like the top 10 most dramatic things that Trump has said this time around. So I do wonder, is there anything that he can really do to slip up? I think the only thing that can look bad for him is if he looks weak. So as Jim said, in the past, he has been able to sort of stay quiet and let other 4 or 5 people fight it out. This time around, if he sort of stays quiet or cowers a little bit, he could look a little weaker than he has in the past.
I think what Andy's saying, in my opinion, is that these are things that would hurt Donald Trump with people who are inclined to support him. And some of those blue-collar workers potentially could vote for Hillary Clinton, right? Similarly, with Hillary Clinton, I think the things that could hurt her the most in this debate would be, honestly, she has proven more with her supporters, more susceptible to the impact of a gaffe, things like saying that the deplorables comment. I was stuck on the 47%,
yeah,
and
sorry.
I thought that wasn't her. Yeah. That wasn't Mitt Romney. But a similar comment that was just unartful and so. The impact that could have, I think, would be on her supporters who are kind of lukewarm, potentially some of the Bernie Sanders supporters, just deciding to just stay home. I don't know that something like that from Hillary Clinton in a debate tonight is going to flip people the other direction per se, but that's what these sorts of things, a gaffe at least on her side, could do, I think.
Well, that's kind of what keeps it close, isn't it, Jim Siegel, that both of them are battling the stay-homes, the people who are just going to not either, well, they might not show up. They might show up at the polling, in the booth, but they won't pull the lever for that race.
Well, it stays close, to go to that point. It's just both of these candidates are very disliked. The public doesn't, I've seen the polls. I've been out doing interviews here in the last week with some folks over in Eastern Ohio, and they don't like either of these choices. I mean, I've heard so many times people say, really, in a country of 300 million, these are the two people that we're forced to pick from. So that is part of the reason you'll see neither of these candidates, I think, pull away too far by the time it's over. And it's also a change election. I mean, if you look at the qualifications and everything, maybe on paper you would think that Hillary Clinton should have the advantage. But this is also an election where people are sick and tired of what's going on in Washington and what's not going on in Washington. They just feel like it's a broken system. They feel like it doesn't work for anybody except for the powerful. And so that is also playing a heavy role here. And it'll be interesting to see how if either one of these candidates in this debate can sort of touch on that and, you know, and make any headway in on that issue.
What we've seen from Donald Trump, at least in the GOP debates, is that he's been able to take his opponents and kind of, perhaps without saying much policy-wise himself, been able to say, to paint them as part of the establishment, as, you know, low energy with Jeb Bush. And you're kind of painting Ted Cruz as kind of this slick salesman sort of a guy when that's and you see that as a viewer playing out on stage in front of you. So if he's able to kind of capitalize on this feeling of we need change, we need you know, we're just sick and tired of the status quo, as Jim was talking about, and kind of be pointing like, this is it. Do you see what I'm talking about from Hillary Clinton? That's something that could really fire up his base and really be an advantage to him.
What about Hillary? I mean, we've talked a lot about Trump. We always talk a lot about Trump. But what about her? What does she need to bring to the table tonight?
Well, I've been thinking about, because when you read some of her debate prep notes, they've been talking about how she's been trying to find a way to attack Trump to sort of show some of his vulnerabilities or some of his weaknesses. And I've wondered, what will that really do? Because again, like we've said, there's not much that has been able to trip
right,
up his campaign in the past.
So what are her options then?
Well, and so what I think is if the Republicans that I've talked to who don't like Trump have voiced two different opinions so far that I've heard, is that one, they're just going to stay at home or not vote for anybody at the top of the ticket. Or there are Republicans who don't like Trump that I've talked to who have said that he's such a threat in their minds that they feel forced to vote for Hillary. And I think that if she can attack Trump in a way to convince those Republicans and convince those people who usually vote for Republican to vote her way, to sort of paint a picture of, listen, even if you're a Republican who doesn't like me or Trump, I'm still the person you should vote for to make sure he doesn't get into office. And I don't know what kind of nuclear attack that would have to be in order for that plan to succeed. But I think that might be what her strategy is at this point.
Right. I think if she you know, first of all, I think she needs to look comfortable. I mean, visuals in these television debates are mean so much, mm-hmm. and at some points mean more than the words coming out of their mouths. Mm-hmm. She needs to not look like she's sometimes looks on the stump where she's yelling into the microphone, mm-hmm. and just doesn't look like that's her thing. She needs to look comfortable and sound comfortable with what she's saying. And I do think she needs, like Andy was saying, she needs to, I think, drive home some points maybe that people have heard about but maybe aren't quite sure about in terms of both her positions and some things with Trump. And the one thing, like, for example, with Trump is, can she hammer home the Russian connections? Because that, I think, a lot of people have probably heard about it, but maybe don't really realize just how deep it goes and just how much he has been saying on the trail and how much his close advisors over the last several months have had in terms of connections with Russia. Mm-hmm. I think if she can drives things like that home, that maybe people maybe it does get a number of some undecideds or leaners to go, oh, wow, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize he had gone that far. Perhaps that helps her.
You know, the other thing is that when you hear her speak on the campaign trail for the past several months, she has very effectively attacked Donald Trump. And I'm interested to see if she brings that same attack face to face in a debate. You know, she has talked quite a bit about one of the things she likes to hit on him on the most is the bankruptcies of his businesses. Hillary Clinton has always just kind of been a person who has an ethic of not wanting to be in debt, and that's something that bothers her personally, you can tell. Mm-hmm. She talks a lot about his comments about women, his rhetoric related to immigrants and people who practice Islam, you know, all sorts of things like that. And she'll hit him on that, you know, by name pretty effectively. And so I don't know what he does if you say that to him to his face. He can't, you know, in fact, because she is a woman, it really won't look good for him to get really mad and start yelling. That's just not a good optic situation. And so can he effectively combat that without dismissing it and without yelling, which is the kind of the two approaches we saw him take in GOP debates.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth noting, and we've kind of mentioned it a couple of times so far, that I don't know if it's unfair or not, but Hillary Clinton is the first female presidential nominee. So there are all sorts of maybe double standards coming into play, too. If you read the New York Times, they were talking about how she's trying to figure out if it would be worth trying to interrupt Trump during the debate. And they said they're trying to figure out if that's going to be seen as pushy and they don't want to play into gender stereotypes. And so, unfortunately, or whether it's fair or not, she's going to be judged in a different way than maybe if a male counterpart were there instead. But like Chrissy just said, on the other end, Trump is probably taking certain things into consideration too, so it's going to be interesting. And I've wondered if it's unfair or not, but it does seem like there's some sort of double standard going on right now.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about the upcoming presidential debate. It's the first of three. It's tonight in New York between Hillary Clinton, the Democrat, and Donald Trump, the Republican. Nominees, respectively, for president. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page, post your question or your comment there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides and our weekly Reporters Roundtable. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're still talking about the debate coming up tonight. Interested in your insights. If you're an independent, you haven't decided yet. More importantly, if you're undecided, tell us what you're looking for in this debate tonight. There are about 100 million people are expected to tune in, but I think that includes people around the world who are intensely interested in this election. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. 2 months after refusing to endorse Donald Trump at the GOP convention, Senator Ted Cruz has said he will vote for the nominee after searching his own conscience. What's your sense about the impact of this? Is this all about, and we will get to the right's previous threat, veiled threat to anyone who promised to vote support the nominee and has not yet, including, of course, John Kasich of Ohio. But Ted Cruz has capitulated. Who's this all good for? This is about the party and not really about Donald Trump at this point.
No,
Jim
it's
Siegel?
Ted Cruz doing this is all about Ted Cruz.
Oh,
yeah. Amen.
I mean, come
on.
Yeah.
I
forgot that one.
It's not even debatable, really.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's simply looking at it. He's trying to look ahead and see how this could be beneficial to his future in politics and potentially another run for president. And that's really, I mean, come on, search your conscience. You stood in front of the Republican National mm-hmm. Convention and basically told people to vote your conscience and wouldn't endorse the candidate. I mean, you know, it's not as if Donald Trump has suddenly said something in the last 2 months that would change that. I mean, mm-hmm. It's all about political gain. And, well, I guess he can do that if he wants.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he not only stood in front of the RNC and said search your conscience and didn't endorse Trump, but then the next morning he went in front of the Texas delegation and just gave just the most candid Q&A ever, with just people yelling at him about you should support, and he stood firmly against endorsing Trump. And so the fact that he is switching over now must mean that he has read the tea leaves, and in order for him to still have a future in the party, especially among the kind of people who already support him, mm-hmm. That he needs to endorse Donald Trump. Whereas, like you said, we'll get to John Kasich. His staunch supporters don't usually spill into the people who are supporting Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So he's not losing as much for not endorsing Trump as Ted Cruz would.
That's true. I mean, so to be clear, there are some people who supported John Kasich who say, you know, I'm really disillusioned in him because he pledged to endorse the nominee and he has not done that. But Andy's right. Those folks more are in the camp of like, poor John, he never thought that Donald Trump would be the nominee. And this is just, you know, appalling, this behavior we're seeing from Donald Trump. So but there are tons of Republicans who were very, very upset throughout the South, in, you know, in Texas, Ted Cruz's home state, you know, elsewhere in the U.S., very upset about the lack of support when this had been pledged. They feel like they voted for Donald Trump, or the party did, and he won fair and square. And this is just, you know, I don't know, sour milk.
And I can't imagine. So you're seeing the fallout with Ted Cruz right now. People who say, oh, you're just wishy-washy, you flip-flop. I think it would be even worse if Kasich came out endorsing Trump right now, because Kasich has really leaned on his good guy persona, the I'm voting my conscience. And so if Kasich were to come out now and endorse Trump, I think it would be politically even worse for him in the long run.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. We're, of course, talking presidential politics, heating up as we approach in less than 12 hours, the first presidential debate in New York between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. What do you think? We'd like to hear from independents, undecided voters out there, if the few that are out there. What do you think? How much does the debate matter to you? Maybe you're not going to vote in this race and you're waiting to see if you can change your mind about that from the debate. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Doug in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Ann. Hey, your roundtable has pointed out that this is a one-on-one debate. The third-party candidates haven't been invited to attend. But I'm wondering if what does anybody think of the potential that Secretary Clinton or Mr. Trump's performance could actually enhance the candidates, of, say, the Green Party or the Libertarian Party candidates?
Jill Stein of the Green Party and Governor Johnson of the Libertarian Party.
Yeah, so it's really hard to see.
Although Johnson will not be on the ballot as a Libertarian, right?
In Ohio, he will not. That's right. Yeah, because the party doesn't have standing.
So he will be on the ballot. It just won't have the word Libertarian underneath him.
Right. I think, honestly, he has enough name recognition that someone who might come in there being willing to vote third party will know who he is. So I don't expect that to hurt him as much, but maybe that's just me. So here's the thing. I think the caller's asking, you know, especially with Gary Johnson, he was at 8%-ish and needed to get to 15 to make this debate. Can he make up enough ground to make it a later debate? I don't see it happening. He really hasn't moved much in the polls. However, the caller is right that somebody who, you know, is on the fence about Donald Trump, maybe a Republican, how Donald Trump does in this debate, for instance, might push that person toward Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson does draw evenly from both candidates. So, I mean, it's possible that Hillary Clinton, you know, not being able to be persuasive, really seem like a change agent, some of those things that people are looking for, you know, kind of she just seems like the same old Hillary Clinton. That could push some people toward Gary Johnson. I'm inclined to think it comes more from Republicans in this sort of situation, but that's not what we've seen in the polls so far. So,
and go ahead.
I think generally it would affect the third party candidates negatively because, I mean, look, you're going to be watching two candidates on stage for an hour and a half, and unless they both really, you know, do a terrible job and they turn everybody off, I mean, I would think it's more likely that if I'm a Hillary supporter voting for Johnson or Stein or a Trump supporter doing the same, it seems to me it'd be more likely that you'd watch those debates and decide, well, now I've decided that, well, she's not so bad. Well, he's not so bad. I guess I can vote for him or her rather than a solid Hillary supporter deciding, well, that was terrible. Now I'm going to go vote for Jill Stein. I don't know that that's just a general observation. I don't know that that's exactly what will happen, but
it is visually a two-person race when you get on that stage, right? Mm-hmm. So that hurts the candidates for sure, the third-party candidates.
A big element to look out for is if you look at the polling and if it's just a one-on-one race between Clinton and Trump for the millennial vote, for the 18 to 34-year-olds, it's a runaway. Clinton is demolishing Trump with the millennial vote. But then when you throw Gary Johnson and Jill Stein in there, yeah, her lead dwindles and she leads the race, but then Johnson is actually pulling second with millennials. And so if she can view this debate also as a way to get those Johnson millennial voters to come back her way, that might be a way that the third party is kind of involved, even though they're
the
not
largest
on stage.
Voting bloc now, cool, in the country,
right,
is the millennials, if they vote.
If they actually turn out.
Have they registered yet? Don't forget to register to vote. 614-292-8513. And Vince in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Vince.
Hi. Yeah, I'd like to make the three short points. Number one, I'm old enough to have seen the Nixon-Kennedy debate and also the first Carter-Reagan debate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think visual impressions are terribly, terribly powerful and important, unfortunately. Mm. And I think a lot is going to hang on, how good Hillary can come across visually on the stage, and I do think she's held to a different standard, very unfortunately, and it's unfair. My second point is that she really has to nail Trump on specifics. You know, enough with the extremely general language. You know, nail him on what he said in the past. Let's get down to the specifics. And thirdly, I think with regard to his statements on Russia, the involvement of his staff with Russia, I think it's very unfortunate. I think at this time in American history, I think so much of the American population is just terribly ignorant of the Cold War period. They don't know the significance of NATO, even if they have an idea what NATO is. I don't know what she can do with that, but I'm a little depressed on that, the general ignorance of the American population on with regards to NATO, the Cold War period, and how it's still echoing today. And I'll just get off and listen.
Thanks, Vince. Appreciate your call.
Thanks.
I do agree. I think it will resonate. If over the course of the debate, you see a number of exchanges where she is providing some depth, specifics, nuances regarding policies, both foreign policy and domestic, and he continues to stick with more of a generalized and goes with more, more of an emotional pitch than a wonkish pitch, I think that could definitely draw a contrast, and I think it's one that – I think it would have to, be done over the course of the debate. I don't think there's any one particular answer where that would occur, but I think she could potentially score points there.
Email from Mike, who writes, I am an undecided and for the first time in my adult voting life will not be watching the debates. The debates will be a new low point in tabloid politics that will not offer substance. Particularly, the indefensible exclusion of Gary Johnson will allow the Clinton-Trump campaigns to focus the debate dialogue into narrow personality issues. Mm. It seems from what I've observed over the past year and a half that the Clinton-Trump tacts in terms of it seems like Trump is much more into the narrow personality issues than Hillary Clinton would like to be, not into that.
I mean, it's just not a benefit for her.
Right.
So I'm
surprised Mike's not going to watch the debate.
Yeah, come on, Mike, watch the debate.
What the heck, man?
I feel like here's the thing. So
why? He's undecided. I mean,
there is a lot about this election that you hear so much, even from people who are at Donald Trump rallies, that they think that Donald Trump is the lesser of two evils. And you're like, you're at a rally. Like, you're spending your evening with the, lesser of two evils.
Really, yeah, well, right? Some of that's celebrity, though, don't you think?
Some of it is. And in the U.S., I mean, think about how you feel when you're watching the Super Bowl. You pick a team that you don't even usually root for, and you're like really into whether this team is going to win, So, I mean, in some ways, that's kind of how we are. We pick a side and we just go all in as Americans. But I feel like, what your emailer is saying is that a lot of this election disgusts people. And why would you want to watch it? I can understand that. I sort of feel like this is a hugely important decision. And one of these two people, like it or not, is going to be the next president of the United States. And so, I mean, that's why I feel good giving my time to watching the debate. And also, I will be working too, but I think, I mean, I have a couple friends who were like, oh, I can't this election. And I was like, you guys, you have to watch the debate. And I really feel like it's important.
Yeah.
So.
And I can understand, I think a lot of maybe what Mike is talking about too, because this is what makes my blood boil, is after the debate, when you just hear all the pundits come out do their post-game analysis.
Yeah, but don't, I mean, that's what just, I don't want to listen to. I want to watch the debate.
Yeah, so I would suggest to Mike, watch the debate, turn off Facebook, turn
afterward.
Off Twitter. Yeah.
But tune in tomorrow because we're going to be
Say, except
listen,
for Andy, if he analyzes the debate, I'm sure will be spectacular.
Everyone but thee and me.
because you do see people just cling to one sentence that was said during the debate, and then they just repeat it over and over and over
again. Talking point.
Yeah, and then they just, and then the people decide that, well, that's the only thing that we're going to care about. So, a sad fact is people always say that they want to hear about policy, but then they seem to be more attracted to the fist fights and the circus of it all. So, hopefully it's more policy driven. Hopefully we get a lot of good, clear answers about which candidate, what each nominee wants to do for the country. So I guess hold out hope for that.
I believe one of the most fascinating things about this debate will be how does Lester Holt handle it as the moderator? There's been a lot of talk about how much should he get involved, especially when lies are told.
Fact checking
mm-hmm. in real time during the debate. And this will be really interesting. I mean, this weekend, the New York Times, Politico, the Washington Post, and the Los Angeles Times all did extensive stories this weekend explaining how Donald Trump lies all the time. I mean, and it's not, they basically say
he just
that,
makes stuff up.
Yeah, it's at one point, I think Politico said that his mishandling of facts and propensity for exaggeration so greatly exceed Clinton's as to make the comparison almost ludicrous. There is an expectation that he's going to once again get up and state a number of facts that are in fact not true, and they want to know how they want Lester Holt to somehow fact check. Well, it'll be interesting to see how he handles that because Lester Holt does not want to become part of this debate in that way. But at the same time, you don't want to just let the candidate say whatever they want. So how does he do it? I think at times when Trump will often challenge the premise of questions, if you put facts in your questions and challenge him, he'll say, no, that's not true. Then I think you can get involved more. But I also think you need to let let the candidates hash this out, too. And it's an interesting balance. I guarantee you one thing by the end of this debate, I guarantee you the one thing we'll all know is that there'll be a lot of folks criticizing Lester Holt no matter what he does.
Yeah, it's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
Poor Lester. Yeah. So I would like to point out something that maybe your listeners I've learned more and more this election that some of these things that we accept is just kind of part of life that the average person maybe doesn't pick up on. So you heard all of those newspapers do these how much has Donald Trump lied this week or this month or, over the course of his campaign story. One, I'm not saying this is a direct result, but one thing that your listeners should be aware of is that at the end of last week, Hillary Clinton's campaign was holding massive nationwide press calls, putting out all sorts of press releases, really positioning this on will Donald Trump be allowed to lie all over this debate stage? And in some ways, these are all very fair stories, and I agree completely with the point that they're making that this is much more of a problem of Donald Trump than it is of Hillary Clinton. But I think it's important for the public to know that in some way, the reason that these stories all spring up before this debate is because this campaign is effectively messaging reporters, and kind of saying like, I think that's true. We don't realize maybe how much we're influenced by that, but that's part of the narrative is.
Well, yeah, I think. But it's also at that point we're at a stage in the campaign.
You're
we're
totally
at a
right.
phase. And I take to heart the criticisms and the comments from people who say, why is the media been bending over backward trying to look balanced by not calling out Donald Trump more often? We would have for anybody else. And a part of it then, too, when the media has done that, of course, he shuts them out of press conferences. He doesn't let him into the room at events, that kind of a thing. But
And
I take that to heart. I think that has been an issue.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think that people don't always understand the behind the scenes. I mean, for instance, I learned this the hard way when you'll sometimes see all of the national publications doing big investigations on like the same week about Trump University, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I made some comment actually to my husband. I said like, oh, you know, that just means that probably some PACs or that support Clinton or the Clinton campaign, you know, shared some opposition mm-hmm. research they had done and kind of mm-hmm. gave everybody a different piece. And my husband was like, no, are you serious? I was like, yeah, that's how it works. You know,
well,
I mean,
maybe they wouldn't be doing that or wouldn't peer that way one way or the other if the media had been not bending over backwards and focused less on the fistfights and more on the issues. I don't know. I mean, could anyone else get away with Trump University besides Donald Trump?
I'm not. I think that it was a reprehensible situation and deserved scrutiny. But I'm just saying the average person does not know
right.
how some of this works, and I think it's important for us to tell them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway,
right. Well,
And I think you're hitting an interesting point because I think this has been such a challenging campaign to cover because you have to ask yourself as a journalist if you're pointing out all these false things that are being said, are you being balanced? Or and you know, if somebody keeps saying things that are not true over and over and over again and you keep covering it, are you being a balanced reporter? And I think you are, but it's just hard because then you as a reporter have to go to these Trump rallies and mm-hmm. then you have to explain yourself to people who boo you, who flip you off, who yell things at you. Mm-hmm. And so it has been a tough line to walk where you have to make sure that you check everything else at the door, but still be balanced.
We will continue our conversation. The debates are coming up tonight, the first debate of three between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides and our weekly Reporters Roundtable. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We are talking about debates. There's lots of other things to talk about, but I just have a feeling nothing quite as important as what's going to happen tonight in New York between Hillary Rodham Clinton and Donald Trump. What do you think out there? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. An email from Charlotte, who writes, I am looking for the adult at the podium to remain calm, civil, and articulate. You're nodding.
I think that's, you know, again, going back to the notes that we've read about how Clinton plans to handle things and how Trump plans to handle things. We've seen that Clinton wants to try to attack Trump on certain angles. But I think another thing that she could do is just, you know, bring a little more civility to the table and kind of act like the adult at the table. I just don't know how many votes that wins you that you weren't going to get anyway.
Mm-hmm. Craig in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Craig.
Yes, good morning. I hope I'm not redundant here. I was recently listening to a clip from the 1960 debate between Kennedy and Nixon, and Kennedy said in a very even tone, well, ladies and gentlemen, your vote will depend on whether you believe in my ideas or Mr. Nixon's ideas. Well, that's certainly not what we hear today. I would like to hear, of course I'd like to hear issues. I'll be paying attention to how much of the time they actually talk to issues. I would like to hear a decent tone, which is what Charlotte just commented on, mm-hmm. and I would like to hear some mutual respect. Now, I'm not going to tell you whom I respect or don't respect, but I believe that they should at least present the impression of respect. That's it. That's okay. What I have to say.
All right, Craig.
Can we ask Craig if he's undecided or not?
You can ask.
Oh, Craig, are you?
And I will answer that I am decided. I do know which candidate I plan to vote for.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
I think that one thing I love about debates is that it's such a different part of the campaign from watching these rallies, mm-hmm. which rallies have been the staple this time around. You know, it's not so much retail politics. We even mm-hmm. thought that we would see more of retail politics from Hillary Clinton. Retail politics is like going into a store and shaking hands with people or getting milkshakes, you know, or ice cream or whatever, cider mills, that kind of thing. And that's what she's good at. She's just better in one-on-one than she is on a stage. And we just even haven't seen that much from her just because of the pressures of Donald Trump drawing thousands of people. And when you get two people on a stage together, I mean, I don't want to bring this up again, but like Hillary Clinton was at Donald Trump's wedding. Like they have had times in their lives where they've been able to talk friendly to each other. And you even might see that. You might see more respect than you expect it to. How about that? Let's root for that, America.
I'm gonna just say
voice of skepticism weigh in here.
Yeah, no, I'm just gonna say if any callers who are looking for mutual respect tonight might be better off watching Monday Night Football.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't look good to like openly hate your opponent on television. I think we'll see more respect.
It's worked for Trump so far.
Lee in Sylvania, suburb of Toledo. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
I'd like to comment on the choices we have for president in the debate tonight. You know, both of these people have plenty of skeletons in their closets. So, you know, you can admonish Trump University, and for every Trump University you bring up, you can bring up something at the Clinton Foundation. I mean, they've got plenty of skeletons. I believe that Hillary's skeletons are far more serious than Trump's. But let's just say that's a wash.
But that's the whole thing. I mean, is it a wash? You really believe that?
Well, no, I don't believe it is. But let's just say it is, because some people seem to be stating that, oh, this Trump University is why you shouldn't select Trump. Well, okay, I'll leave it out and say it is a wash. I think this choice isn't about a Democrat versus a Republican, even though that's the parties they affiliate with. I mean, Hillary Clinton is a career politician. She talks about change, but all you get is more of the same. And you always hear about how democracy is an experiment, right? Are you familiar with that phrase?
Yeah.
Okay, democracy is an experiment, then you need to throw some additional variables into the equation for the experiment. And the variable this time is Donald Trump, a non-politician running as the Republican. If you really believe and support democracy as an experiment, let's experiment and throw the traditional career politicians out of the picture and give somebody else a chance.
Okay.
Now, some people will say that Donald Trump, you know, you can't trust him. He's evil. He's aligned with the Russians, et cetera, things like that. I really don't believe that's true. I'm more afraid of Barack Obama than I am of Donald Trump in terms of giving away the House. I think Donald Trump, with all his flaws.
So you're a Donald Trump supporter. You're going to vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah, okay. I'm not a Republican. I'm a Donald Trump supporter.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, what do you make of what he's saying? He says that's just the way it is. That's how people are thinking about it.
Well, it's a way to say why you're voting for Donald Trump, I guess. I mean, it's, you know, I disagree that it's all a wash on a number of these things. You know, you can't just say the way the Trump Foundation is the same as the way the Clinton Foundation is. So that's all a wash. I think the facts do not bear that out. The Trump University situation, as far as I know, there's no equivalency on the Clinton side to that. I mean, that the accusations being made there is that he has defrauded thousands of people, many of whom were lower income and desperate at the time. And so, you know, and you know, if you just say, well, I don't believe the Russian connections, well, okay, but there's a lot of stuff out there about the Russian connections. You can choose to believe it or not, but there's a lot of information out there. So yeah, that's I guess that's where I stand on it.
And I, Lee represents a certain group of people who are supporting Trump who have said, listen, like, let's just forget about that. Let's pretend that it is a wash and I'm wanting to vote for Trump because I'm ready for something completely different. And we are hearing that from a lot of people. And that's kind of where the messaging started to go during the Republican National Convention where, hey, listen, here's Trump. I know he's not a career politician, but he's a career businessman who can take the country in a different direction. I think it's coming from a lot of people who are just maybe, I don't want to diminish what they think, but are just maybe interested to see where this goes. And they'd like to see, okay, well, we've voted for people who have been senators and governors their whole life. What would happen? And I think there's a what if component that a lot of Trump supporters buy into.
The desire to shake up Washington, I don't think should not be underestimated among the voters right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're sick and tired of the way the two parties have acted. And frankly, I don't think a lot of people don't even see Trump as a Republican. And I think that helps him.
Mm-hmm.
They just see him as a change candidate.
But I mean, the biggest changes that ever make much of a difference happen at the legislative level.
Right.
And we're not seeing necessarily that much change at the legislative level.
Right.
As far as
right.
The polls go.
In terms of people's daily lives, the state legislature has a lot more impact on them than the federal government. The federal government, of course, the big difference being that you control the world's largest military and can do things like make changes to or perhaps influence policy on broader topics, healthcare, Social Security, you know, Medicare, things like that. So,
let's see. Dale in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, thanks. Go ahead. We're running out of time, though, Dale. Sorry to rush you, but I want to hear what you have to say.
I get that. This is going to be a circus tonight, and again, I go back to the overall view of what's going on in the world. We're in the middle of a paradigm shift between the past, present, and future. The past is trying to hold on desperately. And you can look in the Middle East, and the lions of tribe over there are violent, trying to hold on to the past. The same thing's happening here, only we don't shoot one another, okay? Yeah. I would not be surprised with all this going on and all the polls, quotations.
Mm-hmm.
If Hillary Clinton did not win in a landslide because, let's face it, I think Donald Trump is dangerous not only for this country, but the world. And that's why the world is watching.
Mm-hmm. The world is certainly watching. Dale, thanks a lot for that call. Sorry we don't have any time for any more callers. We appreciate all that we've heard from today. Glad we got some balance there, I guess. Nothing that we worked into it. So what are you looking for? Parting comments, Andy Chow.
I just think it'll be interesting to see how Hillary deals with sort of the more extreme things that Trump might say tonight. Like we've said, it's going to be one-on-one, so it really he has to answer for the things that he says on terms of a one-on-one.
And Chrissy Thompson.
Yeah, I'll be looking for policy. Like, do we get actual clear policy positions from both candidates? And I'm looking to see how they address each other, given kind of how hard they have been on each other on the campaign trail. How are they face to face?
How do they meet the expectations games? Hillary Clinton being a woman, and I think Chrissy would even agree with me on this. I mean, there's a different expectation, and I'm not going to argue that it's fair, but she'll be held to a different standard because of that. Because she's been in politics for so long, and it'll be just be interesting to see who is ultimately declared the winner, regardless of what is said.
You recommend people watch tonight?
Sure.
Yes.
Well, yeah,
watch. Don't play a drinking game. That has not turned out so well sometime this election.
Well, the email
just
from
watch,
Mike got me
just
thinking.
Watch. One glass of wine.
Here's someone saying for the first time in his adult voting life, he'll not be watching the debates. And I've heard lots of people say for the first time in their life, they'll actually watch the debate. Mm-hmm. And we hope it's for all the right reasons and not for the wrong ones. But
on the expectations, too, Donald Trump's also said this debate is rigged.
The whole process is rigged.
Lester Holt is in the bag for Hillary, even though he's a registered Republican. And
it's all rigged.
So. That's the other side of that campaign positioning ahead of time that I was talking about. That is definitely happening on the other side as well. Yes.
Chrissy Thompson, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Also, Jim Siegel from the Columbus Dispatch, thanks to you.
Thank you.
And Andy Chow from Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, thanks to you.
Great to be here.
Thanks to everybody for listening. We'll talk about this more tomorrow, so tune in. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.